Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, The Returners, a podcast brought to you by Stylist, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you're a new parent navigating a return to work. My name is Fliss, I'm the Digital Content Director at Stylist, and I returned to work last year after a 10-month break on maternity leave. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host, and today I'd like to introduce Shakira Akabusi. Founder of Strong Like Mum, Shakira is a women's health specialist, TV fitness expert, public speaker and social influencer. She's also mum to Rio, Ezra and twins Asha and Ariana. Alongside encouraging women to balance motherhood with a healthy lifestyle, she's on a mission to shatter the stereotypes surrounding motherhood, in particular body image and mental well-being. Together, we're here today to talk about the dreaded juggle for mums returning to work. Shakira, welcome back to Baby on the Brain. Thank you so much for joining us again. It was such a pleasure having you in at the beginning of this series, and it feels like a nice rounded way to kind of end it with you as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. I'm excited.
And, you know, I admire you. I follow you on Instagram and we talk quite a lot on social media. It's usually me just going, oh my God, because you have four kids. You have four kids, yeah. And a career that just seems to take you to so many different places. And I feel like when I think about the juggle, I think about you because you just seem, it just looks like you make it look so easy on Instagram. And I know that isn't the truth, but talk to me about it. How do you feel?
Well, do you know what? You say that's not the truth. I mean, I post everything on my Instagram. So the juggle is real and it's not always a pretty picture at home.
Ezra on the potty at the park.
No, not Ezra.
Is it not Ezra?
Five, Asha.
Oh, it's Asha.
Okay, Ezra's good.
Ezra's going to kill me.
Sully the good name of Ezra.
Sorry, Ezra.
But yes, exactly. It's that, you know, and it's not always a pretty picture, but that is just the reality of what it is. And yeah, I think for me, like, I've just had to learn to just go with it. It's kind of the biggest struggle, but also once you relax into it, the biggest like freedom when you just go, do you know what? Sometimes I'm not going to have a clue what's going on and I'm just going to have to fumble my way through a situation. Like, it was really recent that I was out and I'm, like you said, potty training the twins. Clearly it's going really well. Asha was at it again. Anyway, and I don't know what kind of mum I thought I was leaving the house with no spare clothes, no wipes, no nothing. I just like caution to the wind as if I could just do it. Left the house, got into a tricky situation. So A, like you're having to use leaves as wipes, thinking on my feet. And then like I had nothing except like, it wasn't even my, you know, like an old baby muslin.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had left that in my car and I was like, right, this, I can fashion something with this. So I somehow managed to fashion some sort of like loincloth nappy around. and then we've made our way home and it was fine. Like, we made it. But this is the type of way that I deal with the juggle. Oh. So I don't know if it's really a success story, but I'm doing it.
I feel like I might be too type A for that. I couldn't do it. We are total opposites. I do not leave the house without a rucksack with every single thing I might possibly need in any eventuality in it. Little sachets of Calpol, a hat, sun cream, a coat, spare socks, a change of outfit for her, possibly a change of outfit for me, a colouring book, the colouring pencils. And it does end up ruining my life.
But it's a good, sometimes that is good.
I don't know.
At least you'll never be stuck in that situation I just described. I sometimes get like one thing in my head where I'm like, I really need this. Like Calpol, I know there was a time where I was like, I have to go over here with Calpol. Very recently, I think so the summer months, it was, I need insect repellent. So I had nothing else, but I had insect repellent. I was like, these mosquitoes and wasps will not get my children. And it was like the one thing I had in my bag.
But look, the twins are now, how old are they? Are they two?
They're three. They just turned three.
They've just turned three. Happy birthday to them. So you 3 years ago must have turned around and just thought, wow, I've gone from two kids to four kids and I've got this career, because you're very successful at what you do. You've got books. You're on. I see you on This Morning all the time, obviously when I'm working. But, you know, you're everywhere. You've got a thriving social account that actually must be really hard work to keep up. When we talk about the juggle, I know you're laughing and joking about, oh, I just go with the flow. But how does that work?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think the reality is sometimes it's really stressful. Like there are times where it's really stressful. And what I'm really trying to work on now is to like put my boundaries in place,
right.
You know, whether that, okay, my, because also when you do sort of the influencer thing, the great side of that is that it's completely intertwined in my life. Mm. So that's great. I'm just being myself. Mm. But the flip side of that is that my phone's always there. You know, I'm always capturing content. And actually, sometimes it's not appropriate. And I have to be like, right, you know, the other morning we went out for like a sunrise kayak with our kids. And I was like taking pictures. And then at one point I was like, okay, I've got to stop taking pictures of the sunrise. And I have to actually see the sunrise with my kids. So putting in boundaries. And it's something that me and my husband are having to learn to do. You know, he works from home and he's having to do a lot of, especially now working from home, there's no 9 to 5. You don't leave the office and then work is done. Some, you know, he's working until 10 o'clock, 11 Oof. O'clock. I'm working after bedtime and really trying to like implement boundaries, which we don't always do successfully. Mm. And there is a lot of trial and error. And the biggest thing that I had to learn to do was to let go of any guilt and forgive myself really quickly when I get it wrong. Because there'll be times where I'm rushing bedtime because I'm like, no, because the algorithm says I have to get it out before 8 p.m. And then I'll sit there and think, oh my gosh, I just missed a story time because I'm worried about putting this post out there. And so, but then I have to forgive myself because I'm only human. Mm. I'm just trying to do a good job as a mum, as a businesswoman, and I'm not trying to be perfect, you know?
Do you ever feel like, I think, who was it? Someone recently has gone viral. It might have been Brené Brown. I can't remember. Who has said, and this is more about your relationship with your husband than anything else, but it's all about how much you've got left. Mm. And do you ever feel like sometimes you're giving 40% to your career and 60% to the kids and the other way around? And how do you manage that in your head?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've seen that as well. And we actually like had a big discussion about that. I think there was a video that went viral about kind of the, if you say to your partner, look, I've only got 20%.
That's it.
You know, that's, yeah, that's exactly. I can only give 20%. And they're like, okay, I've got the other 80. Or if you're both at 20% or you're both at 5%, how are you going to get through a situation? And that's different. I mean, how do you find that?
God, do you know what? That always reminds me of when we both had COVID. So it was, Amber was tiny and I think it was my birthday. So I had just gone back to work. Literally, I must have been 3 weeks back at work. We both had COVID, so no one could come and help. And I remember lying on the floor and we took it in 20 minute sessions. So I lay on the floor and had my eyes closed for 20 minutes while Aaron made sure that the baby stayed alive.
Yeah.
And then he would wake me up and I would feel really sad about it. And that was when we were both on like 2%.
Yeah.
But I don't know how I handle the juggle. Like, I've been really honest with the fact that it's taken 2 years postpartum to feel normal again, to feel like myself again. And I'm just getting into the swing of being back at work and we're in a nice rhythm and a routine. So I am very much routine based. I thrive on routine. We get up at the same time, we go to bed at the same time. We have the same bedtime routine for Amber every day. Like, that's just how I work. And thankfully that's how Aaron works as well.
What do you do when it doesn't go to plan? Like, you know, you have the same bedtime routine. What if suddenly Amber's like, I'm not going to bed? Or, you know, if someone's sick or away, how do you do it then?
Just go into survival mode.
Yeah.
Everything goes out the window. And she was sick about 2 weeks ago and she was up all night. Like, I mean, all night doing hour long coughing fits. And that's when they're like about to be sick as well. So you're like preparing with both hands, like, come on.
Hands. Hands. All night and you're sat there just with your hands.
Look, I'm on baby number one. You've had four. You're more experienced at this. I was there with my hands. But she didn't actually throw up in the end, just as an FYI. If she'd thrown up, I don't know what I would have done. But
She was sick for a week, so she had this horrible cough for a week, and I could feel her coughing in my face, like the spittle on my face. And I was sick the next week, like it was awful. So I was going into being sick after a week of absolutely no sleep. And I'm grateful that, do you know what? I'm just really honest now with my juggle. I'm really honest with everyone. So I went into work and I found a mum friend, Lucy Reba. She's our fashion director. And I said to her, I need your help. Like, what cough medicine do you recommend? And what can I do to make this any better? Because I'm not getting any sleep. She was so kind to me. She recommended some cough medicine and everyone knew that I wasn't sleeping. So everyone just kind of let me get on with things. And that was really nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to do about the juggle. It's the last piece of the puzzle that I haven't got an answer for.
Yeah.
And I see people like Jodie Brearley and Mother Pucker, Anna Whitehouse fighting for like flexibility, and that all helps the juggle, I think. You obviously experienced doing this, like the juggle pre-COVID, and I do think life is very different. The expectations of flexibility are very different now.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. Yeah. I don't know how my parents did it, to be honest.
No, I don't. But also like, I think it's one of these things where so much is changing, like just something really simple, like the speed and pace of life is so rapid and it's only getting faster. Like everything is happening now. Information has to be delivered really quickly in 7 seconds, da, 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 whatever it is. And that adds like a whole new pressure now. So it's not just that either maybe you're a single working parent or you've got two working parents in a household, you know, whatever the scenario is. But then you've also got to meet these demands really quickly and no one has time for excuses, but also you've got real life. And it's, I think like, maybe hopefully there's a period of time of transition where things are going to be figured out, because I was working pre-COVID, like you said, it is different, but there's pros and cons. You know, my husband is home a lot more, which is great, but then actually working from home can be really difficult for both of us. And if you're someone who's starting a business, like I know our guest today who started a business, and you know what can be challenging there is like the pace of the demands of the business are ever changing. And so like I have this constant argument at the moment with my mum and my sister where they're like, well, you need full-time childcare, but not full-time childcare, they're like, you need to have some childcare, you know, you can't always rely on grandparents, for example. And I'm like, yes, but some weeks I'm really busy and 5 days a week I've got to do something, and then the next week there's nothing at all, maybe one like 10 minute coffee meeting and nothing. And so you kind of need flexibility, but you need to be, you know, keeping up with the pace of it. So it is really difficult to get through that stage until, I guess, you can implement structures into your business, into your schedule that, you know, can help you do it in like more of a structured way and get to that routine that you really thrive on. But I don't know how to, well, I do know how to get there because I'm doing it, but I don't know how to get there with always peace, because a lot of the time it is potties in the park.
I have nothing but respect for that. Do you know what? The last thing I'll say here is that actually I do think there's some really good work being done, or has been done over maybe the last decade, dismantling the myth of doing it all. That I think was really toxic and played into the juggle even more. There's still stuff to be done. Like, why I find myself being the first one on the nursery call list, right? And whenever I speak to my colleagues at work, they're the first ones that school calls.
Yeah.
They're the mum, right? So they're, that still needs to be dismantled. But I don't know. I don't feel like I need to do it all now. Like, allowing yourself the permission to not do it all is great. But that does mean you have, like, especially with health and fitness, actually, I have just found a new PT, and I haven't trained with a PT since, God, I was pregnant with Amber, which is 2 years ago now. And I just haven't found the headspace and the time. And I know last time we spoke, I said to you, I tried to work out on my own and it was so awful. I didn't do it again for 6 months because I was so embarrassed and mortified and just, I didn't like myself very much. And it's really nice to have that hour to myself. And I include that in the juggle now.
Yeah.
My self-care, what a horrible phrase, but like, what, that's the one thing I do for myself now. And you must see that with your audience that you reach on Instagram and social media.
Yeah, I was speaking to a client yesterday, and I was doing like a consultation, and I said to her, you know, when do you ever get downtime? And she's like, oh, well, you know, me and my partner, we're really good because, you know, he'll look after the kids and then I can go for a run for an hour and then I can come back. And I'm like, yeah, no, but I'm not even talking about when you're fitting in fitness. I'm talking about when do you have downtime? Like, do nothing. And I am not good at that myself, because almost you feel like it's a waste of time. Whereas in actual fact, it's an investment, not just in like your, you know, being productive going forwards, but also like in your health, in your well-being, in your mental well-being, having downtime. You know, my husband and I will be those type of people. We'll be working on our phones or our laptop until 11:30 at night. And then until we get to the point where we're like, oh, I've got to go to sleep now. And then poof, lights out. You know, we're trying to get better at having like no tech in the bedroom, like take all that out of the bedroom and then go, you know, go to bed. Maybe we can read a book, maybe we can discuss something, and then go to sleep like with a bit of a wind down.
Yeah,
but it's so difficult. You feel like you don't have time for those things, and actually that's the most important things. I also think, I don't know about you, I feel like I'm at an age now where things are starting to happen, you know, like health things with either family members or friends, or and I'm really becoming conscious of like what is really important in life.
Totally
that's becoming
agree.
Yeah, more and more prevalent at this as I get older, certainly moving through my 30s, and I'm just again I think hopefully that'll be a turning point, because I'm realizing I love my work and it's so good to enjoy what you do, which I appreciate that I, you know, can enjoy what I do. But I also know that there are more important things than just, you know, working and trying to really appreciate what life is really about.
I wonder if that perspective is age, milestones, or kids. We will never know, because we're both a similar age and have had kids. So it's a difficult test case, but I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Like the juggle is made easier when your priorities are different.
Yeah.
But then just listening to you talk, I was thinking, oh my God, there's a lot. You've got to work for like 8 hours a day. And then outside of that, you have to have time for yourself and spend time with your kids. Yeah. Ideally. I mean, Paw Patrol is basically the nanny now. And then you have to have quality time with them. But it's all right if it's not always quality time with them, and appreciate things like the sunset and the sunrise. And then do the shopping. And it, you know, when you're just like, actually, it is a bit nuts. When you think about all the things added into your life, like slotting them, this is what gives me a breakdown. I'm like, how do you slot all of this in?
But that's exactly why, like, I'm saying to you, so many of my commitments happen last minute, because actually, like, I'll have a plan. I like to plan and try to be organized. But you kind of just have to go with your instinct in the now. You know, they always say you don't have anything but the now. Like, you can try and plan for something, but plans always change. And actually, I let go of any guilt. If I go into a situation and I get it wrong, or I've shouted at my children because actually I'm stressed about something at work, an email I haven't answered, I have to forgive myself really quick. I know that everything I'm doing is coming from a place of loving my children and trying to do my best for them, trying to do my best for myself and my job and do something worthwhile. And then if I get it wrong, I get it wrong, because you're going to get it wrong, probably. You know, most, I don't think I know someone who hasn't at one point got something wrong.
Yeah.
So just having to let go of the guilt and be like, okay, I'm going to learn from that and try my best to do better next time. And then I'll learn when I make the same mistake again, because ultimately I will. And then, you know, so I think there's something in that, just trying your best and trying to change your, you know, recognize the different perspective of what's really important, and then let it go when it doesn't go to plan and try again.
That doesn't help me with my validation issues.
That doesn't help.
Great. Doesn't help me, because I like to be validated by doing a job well. But thank you so much for that. I think it's about time we brought in our guest for the episode. Desri Asimuide is the founder and CEO of Little Omo, an inclusive award-winning brand created with the intention of providing educational materials and toys for children that include and teach them about diverse cultural representation. Leading the team at Little Omo, the company's mission is for all children globally to have inclusive resources available for them to learn at school and at home. Desiree. Hi, it's so nice to have you on board. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to us go back and forth about the juggle, and you founded a whole business as a first-time mum. And it's actually one thing we haven't touched on yet, but I'm going to ask the question that everyone wants to know, but asking it feels a little bit illegal. But how did you do it? How did you do it?
Yeah. So there's like two sides of this, right? Which I think people are going to be like, how was it easy? So right now, my son being 3 years old, Isaiah, it's a lot harder than it was when I started. So when I started the business, it was in lockdown. So September 2020, I had him in January 2020. So by the time I started the business, he was 7 months old. So he was just really good when it came to sleeping, like he enjoyed sleeping.
Oh.
So once he had his naps, once he, you know, slept at night, that was like when I started working. I was just like work, work, work. And then he would wake up, breastfeed, you know, play with him. He would go to sleep, literally like maybe eight. He was a really good baby, honestly. So
oh,
I never
Desiree,
had that.
Honestly, I'm so jealous.
Sorry. Honestly, like, I'm not even kidding. It was when he turned one that I was like, oh my goodness, like, I can't do this alone.
You don't need to apologize for having a baby who sleeps. I'm just infinitely jealous.
I'm like, what is sleep again? Can you explain to our listeners what sleep is?
Yeah, I don't. I don't have any sleep and nor do I have a business.
Also, you know what? I think if I break it down a bit, I remember when I found out I was pregnant. I literally prayed and I was like, I don't like being sick. So I know you guys were talking about, you know, when the baby gets sick. So I hate people being sick. So I literally prayed. And I was like, God, I don't want any morning sickness. I don't want any of that, please. And I didn't get sick either for 9 months. I'm so sorry to the moms out there that do.
Right, Desiree, yeah, no, sorry. No.
Get out, right? I should just go get someone else on. But I will say from 1 year old onwards, I was like, this is motherhood and I can't hack this. Like my son was jumping off the sofa, fell off the sofa. I like didn't tell anyone, any of my friends or my family until he was like 3 years old that he fell off the sofa. Cause I felt like someone would kill me that their grandson, their nephew, their godson had fallen over. So I was like, I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm going to take it to the grave. But eventually I did when all my friends were like, oh yeah, my child has fallen off. And I was like, oh, okay, it's fine.
Oh.
So yeah, 1 year old onwards, it was absolutely insane. But I would just say that lockdown really helped me because we were at home. Mm. So, you know, I was also made redundant while I was pregnant as well. I was 7 months pregnant in my last job. I was a freelance fashion stylist. And that was really hard for me. I actually got made redundant on my dad's birthday, which was the 4th of September, just gone. And literally a year on from me being made redundant, I actually started my business on the 3rd of September. So it was kind of like a whole year turnaround from always being in a job. I'd worked since I was 16. Mm. And I didn't see myself, I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be, you know, in a 9-to-5, have a really good job, get married and have kids. But I actually was in a long-term relationship, got made redundant, was a solo mum a few days after birth and then launched the business. So it was a big turnaround and it was very upsetting for me because we all want to have a certain lifestyle and sometimes it doesn't work out the way we want it to. But now looking at where I am today, I'm really happy at where I am. Even though I'm a solo mum, co-parenting is absolutely amazing now. It was very hard in the beginning, but I'm just in a place that it's okay. Even though the juggle is still very hard, I'm not going to lie to you. Like this morning, my son went, Mummy, I want to sleep for a little bit longer. And I'm like, we need to get up. All of the kids are back at school, so the traffic is going to be a little bit more. Mm. Have to drop you, have to come back, have a little bit of breakfast, and then jump on and do the podcast, you know? So it's kind of like making sure that everything is, you know, organized and nothing misses its place. So yeah.
Am I right in thinking that you were made redundant in your pregnancy?
Yes, 7 months. Very hard time for me.
Okay, so how did you Yeah, how did you get from there to creating the concept and putting in the steps to create your business?
So I actually graduated from BA in fashion design. So I went to UCA Rochester in Kent. So I've always been a creative, very hands-on, drawing, illustrating. So I was actually gifted some flashcards when I had my baby shower, which was in November, end of November of 2019. And I was gifted those products and I was still, obviously, I didn't have a job at the time. And I was like, oh, should I start a business? Should I do something to do with this? I don't know. So I left it for a little bit. And then I had my son and I was like, you know, when you have your child and you're like, I have to grind, I have to hustle, I have to do so much more for them. That was the point that I said, I'm going to start this business. And then, of course, lockdown came. So I said, this is the perfect opportunity. So that's how it started. I started illustrating, started sketching. I didn't tell anyone. None of my friends, none of my family knew. And literally a week before, so 7 months down the line, I told my family, my friends, and they were like, this is what you've been doing for 7 months? And I was like, yeah. So literally I had all the samples come in. No one knew. So I would sneak it in a little box, put it in my room under the bed at my parents' house. So yeah, I was actually at my parents' house during lockdown because I was dealing with depression just after the fact that I'd become a solo mum and just, you know, the changes that happen. So I actually did have my flat, but I didn't stay there for the whole of probably a year. And I came back, which is where I am now. So it was really emotional for me. Like, even thinking about it now, I don't actually think I've actually explained the full story. So like, talking about it now, it's just a blessing that I'm where I am now. And I'm really thankful because I honestly didn't think I would be where I am, just mentally and physically, and just be there for my son. It's quite hard to you know.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Talk about, but I'm happy I am. So yeah,
well, thank you so much for sharing today. I really appreciate that, and where you are today is tantamount to your hard work and determination and nothing else. So well done. I have nothing but respect for everything you've done, especially hearing about your juggle. There were so many parts to your juggle in that first year. Not only were you solo parenting, but you also have been very honest about your mental health, and you had a tiny child. And I know we're all laughing and joking because he likes sleep, but you know, it's not easy regardless. They shit through their clothes sometimes, and that's hideous. Like, it's hard. It's really hard. And then you created a whole business on top of that. So I think that's the definition of smashing the juggle, if that's possible.
Raising a child and staying in work is a real balancing act. But raising a child with special educational needs and staying in work can feel like enough to tip you over the edge. I'm Lisa Miller, journalist and mother to a daughter with a rare genetic syndrome. I'd like to invite you to the Sen Mums Career Club, a new podcast where each episode I speak to a different guest who has their own unique journey navigating a career alongside special needs parenting. We discuss the triumphs, tribulations, and things we've learned along the way. Listen to the Sen Mums Career Club from DC Thompson, available on all your major podcasting platforms.
At times when the juggle was really difficult, how did you know where to prioritise?
Oh, that's such a hard question. I feel like from when he was born to now, I could tell he needed my attention and as he grew. So for instance, I illustrated all of the products for the brand, right? And it got to, I think last year, after he turned probably about 2.5, I just saw that he wanted my attention a lot more. And I saw something on Instagram, maybe it was about a few weeks ago, that said, what's the scariest part of being, you know, a parent or mother? And someone said it's, you know, watching them grow up, right? And what's the best part, sorry, is watching them grow up. And what's the worst part? And it's also watching them grow up, because you don't get those moments back at all. You know, I was speaking to someone at the dentist where I live across the road, and she was like, you know, her son's 27 and he's getting married. And she said, they just grow up so fast and you don't get those moments back. Like, Isaiah, I'm currently applying for primary school and I just honestly can't believe it. So he goes to primary school next year. So I won't get those moments back of where, you know, I get 2 days off with him. He's 3 days in nursery. He's just growing up so much. So I think the prioritizing came from prioritizing him first. And if I really need to do something so urgent for the business where I don't have time, go into family or friends or, you know, childcare like nursery, to put that time aside. But he always comes first, you know, because also being a solo parent, it's just me. So he always comes first in everything I do. And just making sure that if I can do something overnight, maybe I'm doing an overnight working, you know, in the middle of the night, I will do that for Isaiah. So I think it was just seeing him grow up so fast. And then I remember maybe a few months ago, I was on my phone and he was at home and he was like, Mommy, can you get off your phone? And I was like, oh, that was a really hard moment. He's never said that. And I don't think it was intentional. I think he just wanted my attention. And from that, I always make sure that when we are at home, unless he's sleeping or maybe watching a movie, I'll make sure that my phone is just on the side unless someone's, you know, ringing me. So sometimes I might even put my phone on do not disturb, and my favourites are just my mum, my dad, my brother, his girlfriend, and a few close friends, like, and his godmum, you know, and his dad, just to know that if it is an emergency, people know that, okay, it's on do not disturb, but you can still ring, you know. So I just think it's so important that we put the kids first, but we also, you know, we are building that foundation, that future for them. So sometimes he does get my laptop and he says, Mummy, I'm working today. I'm going to take you to nursery. So he'll play about and act as if he's me, which is so cute. So he'll be like, Mummy, I'm working for little Omar. And I was like, are you? So I said, who's going to go to nursery? He was like, you're going to go to nursery and I'm going to drive you. And then I'll come back and work. So it is also so funny, but also a little bit, I don't know, scary, the fact that a three-year-old knows what I'm doing and knows that I'm always working, you know, which is, it has its pros and cons at the same time. So, yeah.
God, I remember when I started to go back to work, and when I'm working from home, Amber doesn't really know any different because Aaron takes her to nursery, I pick her up, and I have a day off with her, which is lovely. But I do go into London once a week. And so she started to understand that Mummy got on the train and Mummy goes to work, but I don't see her in the morning and I don't see her at night either. So occasionally she'll wake up in the morning and it's a bit like what Isaiah said. She said to me, Mummy, you go to work today. And you know, and that just pulls on your heartstrings. And I know I need to work for me. That's really important for me. I really missed it when I was on mat leave, and there was no question, and there is no question, I will always work. But it did hurt a bit.
I'm wondering what both of your experiences are about other people's opinion of that. So I enjoy my work as well, and what you were saying there about, oh gosh, you know, I don't ever feel bad about working. I love my job, and I want my children to see, you know, hard work, and, you know, whatever, I want them to know that they can also put hard work into something and they can achieve things. But I hear it from other people where they'll say, are you working again today? Oh, you're going up to London again? Like, didn't you go on Monday? And, you know, feeling like I have to fight to explain that. And I'm wondering if either of you have ever experienced that and how you deal with it.
So I think that I've not really had anyone say anything much when it comes to working and Isaiah. And I don't know if it's different because it's just me. So they know that I'm working for Isaiah. I know it's crazy because, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you're working for you and I'm also working for me. But then... Because it's just me, I'm like, Isaiah, Isaiah, Isaiah.
Yeah.
before it was me. And if I was, you know, if there was someone with me, if I had a partner or I had a husband, then it would probably just be for me. But I'm just like, I can't just rest because he's grown up so much and there's so much that I need to be able to provide for him. And also now having the business, it is for me because I want to grow myself as a brand. I've probably had people on social media say things when I first started the business, like, you know, I didn't have any family or friends say anything because they kind of understood. But people on social media would be like, oh, shouldn't you be with your son and things like that, rather than posting on stories or making these videos or, you know, having him in the videos because it's obviously toys. And it just got to the point, and especially at that time, I was dealing with depression and postnatal depression, and I just was in such a horrible place. And sometimes, you know, my friends and family would be like, Desiree, don't worry, like, we know what you're doing, and, you know, people care for you, and the community on Little Omar would be absolutely amazing. But you always get 98% of people that will be supporting you, and that, you know, 2% of people that just want to get fake accounts and emails and just say the most horrible things to you. And I just think to myself, if you don't like something, you know, go and speak to your friends about it, or just don't say anything, because you don't know what someone's going through. You don't know what they would do after. Like, I was in such a place which I just, you know, I know this is so hard for so many people to hear, and we've always had those moments, but I didn't really want to be present. I didn't want to be here. And I just think that people just really have to be kind, whether, like, to children, to adults, to teenagers, to parents, to mothers, to fathers. And I think when I became a parent, even though us as mothers go through so much, I actually saw how much it impacted fathers as well, because fathers are so quiet. You know, dads are so quiet when it comes to parenting, and they're so strong, as well as we are. They don't talk so much. And that was also very scary to see, you know, maybe Isaiah's dad or other people that I knew that were in that parenting stage. We actually have to be very sympathetic and open, and actually asking questions to people, saying, are you okay? How are you feeling? Do you want to go for a walk? You know, have you eaten? All of those kind of questions, you know? Because one thing, I don't know if you guys have seen, but I've got a book called Isaiah's Extraordinary Mum. And the reason why I created that book is because mums are so extraordinary. We go from being pregnant to being in labour to having a child. There's no stopping moment in between those periods, right? And there is going to be an extraordinary dad for any dads that are listening, don't worry. But there will be. But we just jump from each period, and there's not a break, you know. And I just thought it was very important to share what we do and how we do it.
I agree.
Yeah. Do you ever experience it from other people in your life, Liz?
Do you know what's interesting? Listening to Desiree talk, I just wanted to say that your village, the people that surround you, sound incredible. And I have that, obviously, with my family. It's really nice to be close to them. They don't live as close as probably it sounds like yours do. We don't just drop round, but they're not too far away. But what I would say is that my village at work is really good for that. So I haven't had people say to me, oh God, you're going to work again. But there's definitely a distinct difference between the women who I know who have kids who work because it's good for them, and the women who I know who don't work and enjoy being at home with their kids, and the difference in appreciation for both things. And it's a very different set of circumstances, and I just know that I would not thrive being a full-time mum without a career as well, so I don't choose to do that. And I think the two are very separate. I've never had anyone comment on what I do, and I try my hardest to mentally not judge people the other way, because I think it'd be really easy to.
I think there's probably also a third category there of people who maybe don't want to work but have to.
100%.
And I love my work, and again, it is largely a choice, and I would always choose it regardless. But I mean, life is expensive.
Yes.
And we also need to be a two-parent working household in this time. And again, you know, that is probably what I find most challenging, is that people will question me working, but I also have to work, you know. And I probably find that the biggest sour note in the juggle for me, is like having to manage other people's expectations of what they think my motherhood journey should look like, you know, and trying to just stay confident in my decisions.
I agree. And I think you both have far more public lives. I do not have that. I have an office job. I am very much anonymous. I am not someone on the internet who would be recognized. And you two both are. And that is beneficial for you. That's what your business is. And that is how your lives should be. But the idea that people could have any judgment on any single decision that either of you make baffles me. Have you not got anything else to do with your lives? To the people that that do that, it's outrageous.
One thing that I really love that you said, Liz, is, and which I'm a little bit jealous of, and it's the fact that you've got a community at work. I love that, because I'm a solo founder as well, so it gets so lonely. Mm. And one thing is that when I know someone, like how I'm speaking to you ladies, it's like, I feel so confident, I'm fine with talking. Once I get to know people, I'm fine. And I'm not an introvert, I'm very much of an extrovert, but I find that on social media, it's really hard for me to reach out to people, right? Especially business owners. So when people come to me, it's like, hi, hope you're well, and having conversations. So it gets really lonely. So I do remember when I was pregnant, you know, there was three other women that were pregnant with me at my workplace when I got made redundant. And for me, it was great to, you know, speak to those women and text them and be like, how are you feeling today? And all of those kind of things. Mm. But right now, being a mum, it's like I've got my mum friends, like I've got, you know, a close friend who's in business, but that's all I have. So it would be lovely to have that community. And I think that's what I miss about having like a 9-to-5 and an office job, is having that community of women, whether it's, you know, you're single, it's all the ladies that are single, or you're married or you have kids. So I think that's something that's quite difficult, being a solo entrepreneur.
It's so interesting, because I have had almost a completely opposite experience in terms of like my social media is such a great community. And actually, like, I think through motherhood, I learned that being vulnerable can be so empowering, because the second I was like, I'm not trying to be perfect, and here's a mistake, and here's a mistake, and here's a mistake, I actually built a community of people who like weren't expecting to see perfection, and they were just like, you know. So lots of the people on my social media, I've made some great friends through social media, but even the people that I haven't met, like, I generally 99% of the time have a really positive experience, because I found, as I said, I think for me, like, being able to be vulnerable, which is something that I learned through parenthood, has been really powerful. Before I had kids, I was like, I don't cry. I'm one of those people that never cry. I cry at the drop of a hat these days. Like, I will cry any which way.
I was
in tears yesterday because someone gave a little kid a pair of trainers, and then he got to give them to another kid, and I was in tears. Anyway, the point is that being vulnerable, I noticed the power in that, you know, and actually not just through social media, but in everything, you know. If Fliss can go to work, go to the office and be like, I've had a really bad day and I really need someone to help. Being able to communicate that, and if the people are receptive to that, can be really powerful, you know. And I don't know, maybe, you know, a huge sweeping statement to generalize and say that potentially dads or fathers or men in general aren't having that same experience, but potentially that could be what's really, you know, and hopefully the tide is changing on that. I know the conversation around men's mental health is starting to open up, but being able to communicate when you're struggling is huge. You know, Fliss, you'd said about Desiree and community. And that was going to be another one of my questions to you, Desiree, was in as much as little detail as you're happy to share, but when you were going through the postnatal depression, you know, how comfortable were you sharing that with your community, and how did you eventually come through that whilst managing the juggle?
Like I mentioned, I became a solo parent a few days after birth, so it was very unexpected. I was in a long-term relationship, so it's different to someone who, you know, might be pregnant and then they know that they're going to be a single parent. So it was just the shock of everything, right? Having the baby come out, you're looking after that baby, you're also dealing with a breakup, postnatal depression as well. So I felt very ashamed, if I'm honest. I felt ashamed that my relationship had broken down. I felt ashamed that I was a solo parent. That was not the life I dreamt of. So I didn't actually share it. So I had Isaiah 2020. I didn't mention it till the year after. And if I'm honest, people were so happy that I shared it. People were over the moon because some similar people were going through the same experience. Mm. And I've not ever stopped talking about it now. Like, I talk about, like you said, you know, the struggles, the juggle of, you know, sometimes, you know, having to go to a conference, having to do a speaking event, and then, you know, dropping Isaiah or looking, finding someone to look after him and things like that. Mm. So it was very hard, you know, sharing it, but I did it on my own accord. I didn't, you know, ask anyone, should I do this? You know, I was just like, I think I'm ready to do this. Because, you know, you would get the old people say, oh, where's Isaiah's dad? Or it's just, you know, you and him that are going to the zoo, or, you know, he's not there. And that was mainly through, I would say, my business Instagram and not my personal Instagram. Mm. But I did end up sharing it on my personal Instagram, like as a video, and just sharing it with people. So it was really hard and people took it very well. Even though I've had that moment of, you know, a child, you know, sleeping and, you know, napping and all those great moments. After that was really tough for me, honestly. Very, very tough. The juggle was real, should I say.
I think, like you said, everybody's got something going on.
Yeah.
You know, and you said about, you know, be kind, and it can sound so like such a generic phrase, but really, and not just other people to each other, but also just to yourself. Yeah. Like, we can be so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
This juggle, like you said at the beginning, Fliss, to have it all. Mm. But actually, like, we can only do what we can do, and we can try to do it well. Forgive ourselves when we get it wrong.
Yeah.
And try, I guess, the ultimate thing is to try to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
What else is it really about?
I've got one final question for you both.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask you, if a woman asked you, like, maybe part of your community, maybe not, maybe someone like me who's just come out of the blue but is a mum, someone said to you, how do you do it? Would you mind being asked that question? Because I wouldn't, but I know it has been a contentious question in the last decade to ask a woman, well, how do you do it? Because you wouldn't ask a man.
Yeah.
But genuinely asking from a point of, I'm struggling or I'm baffled, I actually don't know how you do it. How would you feel if someone asked you that?
Do you know what that question reminds me of? And on social media, and you know what question she gets tired of is, how do you do it with twins and a child? So Shakira, I'm sure you get people saying, how do you do it? You've got four kids, right? And that question of how do you do it reminds me to that. How do you do it as a solo mum? How do you do this? And I just think how everyone else is doing it, you know?
Mm.
And I do feel sometimes a little bit, I don't, do I feel offended sometimes? Because I'm like, I don't know what else you want me to do. Because I've got a child, I only have to look after him. I've got a business, I only have to run the business. How do you eat? Mm. I have to eat to stay alive. You know, it's like if you ask someone who doesn't have a child, how do you do it being, I don't know, a vice president of your company, or, you know, being a manager of a retail store? You just have to do it. You know, I just don't know if there's one answer to that. I think every single person's answer is always going to be different. And I just think, like you said, men don't really get that answer as much, because it's like, you know, I don't know if it's because sometimes it seems like, you know, in the public eye or visually, when you go out, you see a woman and she's doing everything. She's pushing the buggy, she's holding the kids, she's doing the shopping. And maybe people don't see a large amount of men doing that. So that's why the question always falls on us. I don't know.
Mm.
I would not be offended personally, but probably because I'm always asking people when I see someone, you know, often just like, even if it's just like research, if I see someone doing something really great, I'm like, how did you get there? How did you do that? You know, when I see you said, Felicity, about the work that I'm doing with this morning, I love that. Would love to work with them more. I'm like, how did you do that? You know, one of my good friends has been one of their medical professionals for a while. I'll be like, how did you get there? How did you do that? So actually, I will ask that question. And I actually would ask, I ask it to men as well. Mm. I would more just be like, how do you guys do it? You know, when someone, if I meet someone of an older generation and they're like, we've been married 50 years. I'm like, how did you do it? Because clock's ticking. He's annoyed me last night.
Okay.
You know, so so I would genuinely ask them, how did you do it? But also, if I am asked that question, I think my honest answer is, I agree with you, Desiree. Like, you know, you do it because you have to, or because you want to, because, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. But I would always say, like, I don't always do it well. That is the honest truth. Like, for me, being a mum, being a parent and running a business, I, you know, try my best to do it well. And some days I get it right. Some days I wake up, sunrise at the beach with my kids, back home, nutritious breakfast. And then I've got a couple of hours at my laptop. Some days it's a mess. And some days I'm like, can you just be quiet? Or look, we've got to put the TV on again because I've really got to take this call. Yeah. Some days it's a mess.
That sounds like me.
And me.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a mess is how we do it. You know, but so I'm just trying.
That was one of the most interesting, insightful, passionate, emotional chats, actually, I've had this series. Meeting Desiree and listening to her story is inspirational, and I kind of wish I could be a bit more like her. And I think that's what my key takeaway is. Something that she said and something that you have also said that is goes against everything in my life is that life goes on, and the way that Desiree and her son have a relationship where everything she does is built around him, and she works into the night. She works around him to make sure that he is her number one priority. I feel like I need to relax into it more. I feel like I'm making too many rules, and I know boundaries are important, but the juggle is never going to always be perfect. And you have said that it doesn't matter if it's not perfect because it will just happen anyway. That is my key takeaway. You just got to ride the wave, to quote Finding Nemo.
I was like, to quote you, Shakira, to quote Finding Nemo.
Ride the wave, dude. Go on then. What was your key takeaway?
It's felt like a bit of a roller coaster in terms of emotions. Yeah. Like, I've had some belly laughs in this last hour. But then I've also actually got some things that I will think about for the next few days that will really stay with me. I think for me, I do agree with you, you know, relax into it. And it doesn't mean that it's always going to feel relaxing. I think it's just kind of like understanding that when things don't go to plan, just try and deal with it, let it go, not feel guilt, not feel, you know, be kind to yourself. I think for me, my takeaways from this conversation will be the power of community and kindness. And I don't just mean kindness to others, which is also important, but also kindness to yourself. That we are all, you know, working parents. We're just trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure out how to do this juggle. I think there's still a way to go, but we are, you know, trying our best. And the community that you have, whether that's your partner, your family, your friends, your work colleagues, however that looks to you, I think being able to be vulnerable and open with people so that you have that support, that real support where you can be yourself, is probably really key.
I could not agree any more with you. And I have literally had the most lovely time speaking to both of you today.
A lovely old time. And to quote Finding Nemo.
Well, that's all for episode 10 of Baby on the Brain, The Returners. A special thank you to my co-host Shakira and our guest Desiree. This was the last episode in the series. You can catch up on previous episodes via all the main podcast providers, and we'll be back with a season 3 before you know it. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram and use the hashtag StylistBabyOnTheBrain. Remember to subscribe, share and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, which will help other mums returning to work looking for podcasts like this find us more easily.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.